complete with the plan.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the September 14th Board of Supervisors meeting. If you would all please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Say with me, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, changes to the agenda?
We have an added item to board business, D1, a report on the preliminary feasibility for establishing a county redevelopment plan and agency, all districts. Item continued from September 7th, 2010. Receive report and instruct staff to prepare a work program and schedule and report back on December 7th, 2010. Staff is recommending this item be placed on the agenda following item C1. Added items to closed session. Pending litigation. A. Conference with legal counsel. Existing litigation. 18 Shears et al. Versus County of San Luis Obispo. And 19 Buell et al. Versus Monterey County et al. It is the intention of the Board of Supervisors, sitting as the Board of Supervisors of the San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District, to meet in closed session concerning the following. 20, Rosedale Rio Bravo Water Storage District et al. Versus California Department of Water Resources et al. 21, Central Delta Water Agency versus California Department of Water Resources. And 22, Central Delta Water Agency versus Kern County Water Agency. Requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement.
Thank you. That brings us to our consent. I have two requests to speak on consent. I think I'll have three. A8, Tammy Douglas Schatz, please, and followed by Eric Greening on A11.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Tammy Douglas Schatz, Human Resources. Just want to bring to your attention today that unrepresented management operations, confidential staff, along with appointed and elected department heads and your board, are increasing pension contributions with item A8 today. This will result in a decrease in pay for the 344 employees in these groups. There is not a pay increase to offset this employee-paid pension contribution. We'd like to thank this group for their professionalism and leadership regarding this action. I also want to point out that the majority of employees in this group last received an across-the-board increase of about 6.3% in July of 2007 is the date that that was effective. And since July of 2007, this group has increased their employee-paid contribution to the pension by 4.05%. This action today will bring the increase of employee-paid pension contributions to 4.61% in just over 3 years. Again, thank you to the employees in this group for their consistent contribution to the board's goal of equally sharing in the cost of pension increases.
Thank you. Mr. Greening, and followed by our clerk recorder, Julie Rodewald, please.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and we do indeed, we're fortunate to have absolutely amazing employees in county government. I'm always impressed by the people I know and the work that they do. Anyway, I primarily am here on A11, the contract with Aspen Environmental Group relative to an environmental impact report for the California Valley Solar Ranch. There are two major solar facilities being proposed in the Carrizo Plain, and the other one is a little bit ahead of this when the draft EIR is just out, and I've been reading it, and in so doing, I've come up with a little bit of advice relative to this one, just a reminder, and that is, let's all remember that the baseline under CEQA is what's on the ground now. It is not offset as a baseline by power produced by some other means. Certainly that is a valid thing to compare when we're comparing alternatives. This project is probably environmentally superior to producing the same amount of energy in a fossil fuel power plant or a nuclear plant. It's probably environmentally inferior to the same kind of facility in a place with less biological sensitivity, such as the other side of the Temblors where there are locations. But in any event, the baseline for any evaluation of any project is not what might be if we don't do this and get the same amount of power from somewhere else. The baseline is what's on the ground now. And I just, as I've been reading the other EIR on the other project, I just thought I should make this explicit so that we're all on the same page. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Rodewald.
Good morning, Board. Julie Rodewald, County Clerk Recorder. I just wanted to give a quick recap. I think I recapped it fairly well in my transmittal letter to you. But I want to especially thank all of those who helped us through, except for the weather, what I would have called a long, hot summer. It was definitely long. It hasn't been hot. But we survived three countywide elections, and we could not have done it without the assistance of other county departments. Our poll workers were exceptional in their commitment to our voters, and our voters turned out in much better numbers than they did county district-wide, and for that I want to just send my thanks out to them.
Thank you, and we too extend our thank you to all those that helped. I know the folks sitting out front here, I stopped and visited with them a couple of times, and they were just enjoying themselves and taking in the vote. Appreciate that. I'll bring it back to my colleagues. Any requests for any of the items? Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 812A for comment, please.
Mr. Asajian. Mr. Patterson.
Yes, item A11 for comment.
Mr. Gibson.
Since we have a light day today, sir, I'd like to make comment on A8 and 9 and A20 as well.
We might have, there goes the day. And I'm
going to
make comment on A19. So we will start with A11, Mr. Patterson, or I'm sorry, Mr. Gibson at A8.
A8, as our Director of Human Resources indicated, is a pension rate increase that's not accompanied with a salary increase. And I just wanted to thank those county employees affected by that for their understanding of the difficult situation that we're in. It's this sort of sacrifice that helps us get a budget, a set of county programs cobbled together in this very difficult financial situation. A9 is a change of title for our correctional officers that work in the jail, folks that have some of the most difficult jobs in this organization. They are going to be now installed as peace officers, and it gives them the opportunity to do more in terms of investigating crimes in the jail and conducting searches and things like that that previously they had to call in other deputy sheriffs off patrol to do. And so we've got some efficiency going there. And if I might just roll into a quick comment on A20, that's the final action on the budget. I'd like to extend thanks to all our departments. What we have here is a pleasant surprise, and Mr. Grant may want to expand on this a little bit. We have ended up with $2 million more than we were projecting at the end of last fiscal year, which is going to be rolled into reserves. I would note that extra $2 million is a result of a lot of pluses and minuses in a very complicated budget situation. But we'll see that, you know, in a place where revenue fell some $13 million short, our county departments came up with $17 million of expenditure savings. And through that hard work, we end up with a bit of a surplus that helps replenish our reserves, helps set us up for what we know is going to be another challenging budget year. But I just wanted to thank all those involved.
Grant, do you want to comment on that? Because I did have a policy request, but I...
And I'll let you handle that request on your own. But, yeah, I think their thanks does need to go out to the departments and all the staff that have helped to balance this budget throughout the last couple of years and actually end up with savings at the end of the year that we can utilize, hopefully,
put it in our bank basically for another rainy day, which may come at any time since the state budget has not been completed yet, and we don't know the outcome of that. But the departments have really done a good job of holding positions open and only doing the minimal as required right now, but still providing the services that are required. So many thanks to the department heads and their staff.
My thought was that if we had a fund balance that would be carried over, whoever was the chairman of the board, it would go into his district.
good luck with that.
Yeah,
is that a motion, Mr.
Yeah. I got a lot of chuckles out of staff when we went on this report. Mr. Patterson, please, on A11.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to follow up with item A11. What it is a contract amendment with Aspen Environmental, who's conducting both environmental impact reports on the Carrizo Plain Solar project, and some additional information is being or has been considered for that project, and this is just a contract amendment to catch up with that. And SunPower, whose project this particular item applies to, their draft EIR is out, and they are holding a community meeting tomorrow evening from 7 to 8:30 at Embassy Suites here in San Luis Obispo. Anyone interested in that project is invited to attend that meeting. San Luis Obispo County, our environmental division of the county planning and building, is holding a workshop on that EIR next Wednesday, September 22nd, from 6 to 8 p.m. in the Carrizo Plains Heritage Center, which is located just off Highway 58, about 1 mile east of Soda Lake Road. So those of you, again, that are interested will have an opportunity to have a briefing on the EIR for that project next Wednesday, 6 to 8, at the Carrizo Plains Heritage Center. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Hill, A12.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is A12A is about the subdivision and navigation easement that basically benefits the Octagon Barn. I think everybody's familiar with this this real gem in our county that you usually see on the 101 down by Higuera. And I just wanted to take a moment since he's here to thank B.K. Richard from the Land Conservancy, who's been the leader of a great group of people in restoring and making this and continuing on. This will be one of the great venues in our county in times to come. So I'm very thankful to Mr. Richard.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. And I'm going to make comment on A19, if I could, please. And this is for our new Veterans Service Department. We have selected and appointed Mr. Paul Burns to the position of Veterans Service Officer. Mr. Burns will be the department head providing leadership and administrative direction to the Veterans Service Department. Department advocates for veterans, their dependents, and survivors, providing information and services for them to receive a variety of veteran benefits, including monetary and medical entitlements. He will replace Michael Pippenberg, who retired in April of 2010. Mr. Burns actively served in the United States Navy Seabees for over 20 years before retiring from the service in 2005. He has had a distinguished career of service, serving in a variety of leadership positions and achievement that include 2 National Defense Medals, 6 Good Conduct Awards, and 4 Navy Marine Corps Medals. Paul currently works for the county as the Capital Projects Coordinator in the General Services Agency, and he'll start his new position immediately. So,
Paul, you want to come on?
And I know we're going to be in good hands because it's with the Navy.
Thank you. Thank you all. I appreciate the opportunity. I'm here to serve our veterans in the county. As we all know, saluting the flag this morning, that without the veterans, we wouldn't be standing here saluting the flag. So my position and my with helping them is to continue the good service that the department has done over the years and try and make it better and help our veterans. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, and we welcome you aboard.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, Madam Clerk. Oh, I'm sorry, let's go to...
Get a motion first.
I'm sorry.
I move we approve the resolution.
Second. Roll call.
Mr. Sajjan?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
And Mr. Meacham?
Yes. We have one for each of us today. I'm sorry. Yes. I need a...
Well, we approve the consent agenda.
This meeting is going... I thought it was going to be so short that we were just going to walk out of here today, but...
Come on, Supervisor.
Second.
It's been taking so much time.
Okay, let's go backwards a little bit. I needed a motion to approve the consent.
I'll move that.
Okay, I have a motion from Supervisor Hill, seconded by Supervisor Patterson. How's that?
Okay.
Roll call, please.
Supervisor...
So Hill and Patterson for the consent or for the presentation?
For the consent.
Okay. Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
And Mr. Meacham?
Yes. Now, let's go to the presentations. I have a motion by Mr. Asajian, seconded by Mr. Gibson. Roll call, please.
Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
And Mr. Meacham?
Yes. And with that, I will start on my left over here with Mr. Gibson, please, if you would take the first resolution.
All right. I'd be pleased to do that, sir. Item E3. I'll be pleased to ask Dr. James Glynn to come to the lecture. And the following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas Family Care Network Incorporated has selected Dr. James Glynn
as the 2010 recipient of their Circle of Serving Award for his extraordinary efforts towards enhancing the well-being of children and families in San Luis Obispo County through decades of exceptional, multifaceted community service and unwavering support of children, youth, and families. And whereas James Glynn's community efforts have included serving as chair for Healthy Eating, Active Living San Luis Obispo, serving on the board of the Sexual Assault Recovery and Prevention Center, the First Five of San Luis Obispo County Board, and Activity for All, and working in collaboration with the Center for Physical Activity and Nutrition at the University of Arizona. And whereas James Glynn, with a heart focused on serving those most in need, has worked to further the mission of many important causes, including the Special Olympics, the Multiple Sclerosis Society, the San Luis Obispo Literacy Council, the American Heart Association, National Council for Health Fraud, the Children's Health Initiative, and San Luis Sports Therapy Community Foundation. And whereas James Glynn exemplifies the mission of the Family Care Network to enhance the well-being of children and families on the Central Coast, his commitment and passion for others stands as an inspiration to us all. It is our honor to celebrate this incredible community leader for being a dynamic role model of community service. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby recognize Dr. James Glynn for his exemplary service to children and families of San Luis Obispo County. Dr. Glynn.
First and foremost, I'd like to thank the Family Care Network for the recognition of this award. The health and well-being of children is paramount in the goals of what I'm trying to achieve in my life. And finally, I'd like to thank the Board of Supervisors for their continued support of the health and well-being of the children in this county. Specifically, I've had the opportunity to work with Adam Hill, Tasha Gadjian, and Jim Patterson on a variety of boards as well as local fundraisers. So I'd thank each of you individually as well as all of you on the board here today for your support of our most important resource, which are the children in our community. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir.
Yeah.
Mr. Patterson, if you'd like to take the next item, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. It gives me great pleasure to read a resolution proclaiming September as Cancer Support Services Awareness Month. Is there someone in the audience to receive this? If you would come forward. Thank you. This is a resolution proclaiming September as Cancer Support Services Awareness Month and September 18th as Central Coast Cancer Challenge Day in San Luis Obispo County. Whereas on Saturday, September 18th, athletes, volunteers, and dedicated staff will celebrate life and raise funds in support of cancer patients, survivors, and their families in San Luis Obispo County during the Central Coast Cancer Challenge event in Laguna Lake Park. And whereas the Central Coast Cancer Challenge is a day where the San Luis Obispo community can gather and participate in healthy cycling, running, walking, and children's events, learn about a healthy lifestyle at the Wellness Expo, and dance the dance of life at the Let's Make Cancer History concert, all while raising funds for the Wellness Community and Live Strong Foundation. And whereas the Central Coast Cancer Challenge pledges to continue to raise funds annually in support of cancer patients, survivors, and their families in San Luis Obispo County until cancer is history. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim September as Cancer Support Services Awareness Month and September 18th as Central Coast Cancer Challenge Day in San Luis Obispo County.
I just want to thank the Board of Supervisors for this honor, and really this event is a community event, and we've had great support from the businesses in this community as well as its citizens in terms of volunteering. The statistics on cancer are dire. They're saying that 1 in 2 men and 1 in 3 women by the year 2030 will have had a cancer diagnosis. And this event specifically, there's a lot of organizations out there raising funds for research, and thank God for them. This particular event is to raise funds for psychological and social support. And we have a wonderful, we have two wonderful beneficiaries. One is the community, the wellness community, which has an Adobe House up in Paso Robles. And anybody who walks through the door there, it's not a clinical setting, it's a home setting, and it's a big sigh of relief. But all the services that the wellness community provides are free of charge. And they put together educational programs in all the area hospitals. So they're vital. They're very vital to this community. The Live Strong Foundation is Lance Armstrong's foundation, and we all know the good work that they do. So I just want to encourage people to come out and participate, whether you're an athlete or not. If you're a couch potato, just, you know, come and walk. But we just want to have people come out. You can listen to the concert, you know. But it really does take a community, and my final thing is never underestimate that one person can do a lot of good. Thank you.
Thank you. What time is the event?
The event is from 7 to 2. The cycling events take off first, and then the running events start about 8:45, 9 o'clock. The concert starts at noon. It's free. It's open to the public. You can stroll through the Wellness Expo during the full day. And people can register online still at centralcoastcancerchallenge.com, or we'll be set up at Farmers Market in San Luis Obispo on Thursday night in front of Pottery Barn, and also at the Embassy Suites on Friday from 4 to 8 p.m. So we
Thank
just
you.
Encourage the community to come out.
Thank you so much. And I know when you opened the facility in Paso Robles, it was, what an incredible facility that is.
That was the brainchild of two other people who unfortunately were diagnosed with cancer on the same day, the Baldwins.
Right.
And really got that ball rolling. We plan to do this event every year. And I just think and I hope that it will grow.
Thank you very much. Move to Mr. Asajan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Clancy will come forward, please.
Are we having an issue with our microphones? Or?
Do you hear the squealing high pitch? Just fix it.
I thought that was Cacho.
Yeah. All the dogs are in the hallway.
Okay. We're going to have a good day.
Okay.
It looks so easy. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gives me
great pleasure to read this resolution declaring September 2010 as Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month in San Luis Obispo County. The following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas, ovarian cancer is the fifth leading cancer-related cause of death among women in the United States. Each year, about 21,000 women are diagnosed and about 15,000 women die from ovarian cancer. And whereas the estimated new ovarian cancer cases in California in 2009 were 2,390, and the estimated ovarian cancer deaths were 1,580. And whereas early recognition of symptoms is the best way to save women's lives. And whereas Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month and the 12th Annual Walk for Awareness and Hope help to increase knowledge of this deadly disease and to educate our community. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors does hereby declare September 2010 as Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month in San Luis Obispo County. If you please come forward and accept this resolution.
Maureen Mo Clancy, and I'm an ovarian cancer survivor. Did you know that September is Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month? Neither did I, until I was diagnosed on January 1st, 2006 with stage 3 ovarian cancer, and on that day I became a survivor. Nationally, did you know that 75% of the women are diagnosed in the late stage, which is stage 3 and 4, and statistically only 44% of them make it to a 5-year survival mark? But if diagnosed in the early stage 1 and 2, there's a 90% survival rate. Here in California, as mentioned, there was an estimated 2,400 new ovarian cancer cases with an estimated 1,600 deaths. Hence, here I am, 4.5 years later, on a mission to raise awareness and to educate our community so that we can save more lives. Back in the spring of 2005, after the passing of my parents, I ran a marathon in Mesa, Arizona, in qualifying time for the Boston Marathon. My training was going well up until Christmas 2005 when I began experiencing urinary symptoms. On New Year's Day 2006, I went to Aurora Grande Hospital's emergency room where I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. Immediately, my total hysterectomy surgery was scheduled. Ouch. Plans for chemotherapy were arranged. The Boston Athletic Association was notified and they deferred my race, thankfully, to 2007. Once home, I began my rehabilitation, first walking, then jogging, in August 2006. I returned to part-time work at the hospital, continued being monitored by my physician, and life began to have some normalcy again. With a smile on my face, I successfully ran the Boston Marathon in 2007. In June 2008, I had a recurrence and was subsequently treated. This time, I continued working and joined the Central Coast Survivors, a group of women cancer survivors who paddled and raced dragon boats. Since then, in 2009 and 2010, I organized a fundraiser, raised awareness through various local media, and in July 2010, I attended our national conference in Washington, D.C., where I and 100 other survivors advocated for our cause on Capitol Hill. Upon reflection of my journey thus far, I am grateful for the support of my family and friends, and especially our community's support. Because awareness is currently the best detection, I am here today sharing my story in the hope that you will join me in turning up the volume on this deadly disease and continue to do so until there is no more cancer. Thank you.
Thank you. Great story. Wow. Mr. Hill.
Great story.
Yeah, that was
hard to follow that.
thanks for the goodies.
Thank you. Stacy, I'm assuming, is going to come for the Parks Volunteers resolution. Thank you, Stacy. Whereas these volunteers have provided approximately 73,228 hours of service during fiscal year 2009-2010 to San Luis Obispo County Parks, and whereas these volunteers routinely donated their time and resources to help with ongoing projects and maintenance which allowed facilities to continue to operate at a desirable standard. And whereas the actions of these volunteers has created better parks, recreation, and natural areas within our county, and whereas these contributions have, excuse me, these contributors have donated $30,550 in products and supplies during fiscal year 2009-2010 to San Luis Obispo County Parks, and whereas these volunteers and contributors have reduced staffing and material costs, thereby saving the county hundreds of thousands of tax dollars, and now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby commend the volunteers and contributors for their significant service and donation to the San Luis Obispo County Parks and the people of San Luis Obispo County. Stacy.
Go ahead and grab the mic on the other side since the speakers aren't working. I'm going to be doing this. Okay, is it on? Oh, there we go. Hi, County Parks Coordinator Stacy King. And I'd first like to say that Curtis Black would have loved to have been here, but he had a personal obligation that he had to attend to, so I'm up here instead. On behalf of the County Parks volunteers, I want to thank the board for this resolution. The County Park volunteers are just an enormous asset to the County Parks program. And I think one of the things that we have to realize is that it's important to remember that receiving volunteer help does come at a cost. And some of those costs include the supervision and training of these volunteers. There's also materials and supplies. There's marketing and promotion that is also involved. The improvements that we've made to our tracking system have also helped us to calculate what that cost is, and this year it was approximately $103,000. And then with that we received $14.85 in service for every dollar that we did put in. And so with the 73,000 hours that the volunteers did put in, we received over $1.5 million in that value of service. So it's not a bad return on our investment. I also did a little bit of research yesterday, you know, trying to figure out how many volunteers we actually had. We have about 46 groups and individuals, more so just the groups. And I was also trying to calculate about how many volunteers are in each of these groups because we really don't know. But just kind of on a very minimal basis, we have anywhere from 900 to 1,000 volunteers that are helping County Parks right now. So with that, we're going to be doing an appreciation dinner this Friday at Cuesta Park, and I invite all of you to come, and I do have a flyer here that I want to give to you. Again, we really appreciate these volunteers. They're just an enormous asset, and we couldn't have a successful program like we do without their help. So thanks again, and I do want to finish with a quote from Alice Sandstrom that says, "Volunteers polish up the rough spots in our community," and that's absolutely what they do. Thank you.
Well, we look forward to seeing you on Friday, and we extend our sincere thanks to all the volunteers. Matter of fact, I've got this little thing that was given to me that says, "We heart our volunteers," that they give at the Pastoralist Library, folks that volunteer. So, thank you very much. Well, it's my pleasure to read the final resolution, and if I could ask Lisa if you could come forward, please. And this is a resolution proclaiming September 2010 as California Wine Month in San Luis Obispo County. San Luis Obispo County's winemaking legacy is world-renowned. The proud heritage dates back to the late 18th century when Spanish missionaries first introduced grapevines along our coast. Our county's unique combination of climate, topography, and soil has attracted many expert vintners and wine growers to make San Luis Obispo County one of California's most exciting wine regions. Four American viniculture areas, or AVAs, the Arroyo Grande Valley, the Edna Valley, Paso Robles, and York Mountain demonstrate the distinct differences in San Luis Obispo County, which is home to more than 250 wineries and 29,000 vineyard acres. And whereas whether one is a viticulturist, vintner, tourism partner, or simply a fan of California wine, all can take part in supporting California Wine Month. Visit a favorite winery, restaurant, wine bar, or gather with friends in September to support local businesses and toast to the 2010 vintage. Local wines are perfect complement to a delicious meal, vacation, and gathering with friends. and we celebrate California Wine Month in San Luis Obispo County, sponsored by the Wine Institute, Central Coast Vineyard Team, Paso Robles Wine Country Alliance, San Luis Obispo Vintners, and San Luis Obispo County Visitors and Conference Bureau. Therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim September 2010 as California Wine Month in San Luis Obispo County.
Appreciate all that you do as our Board of Supervisors to encourage and promote our fabulous wine industry that we do have here. We do so much for the community, and we're so proud to be a leader in this community. And in order to maintain our quality of life and sustain our economic viability here, I appreciate your recognition of what we do here. And I just wanted to mention to you that this year, as a result of our auctions that we've held, we're able to donate $60,000 back into the community in the way of charitable contributions to our community. So we're very proud of that. It's been a great year for the industry, and again, we appreciate your support in helping us achieve that. I do want to, again, encourage you to get out there and enjoy this fabulous community we live in. There are a lot of discounts and promotions emphasizing and celebrating California Wine Month. So please do take advantage of that, and be sure to get out there for Sunset Savor the Central Coast beginning on September 30th and running through October 2nd. So thanks so much, and have a good day.
Look forward to it. Thank you, Lisa, so much. Okay, we're going to move into public comment. First up will be Mr. Greening, followed by Gwen Taylor.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and am I to assume we should all use this podium, this microphone, and hold it up and make sure it's on?
It is on.
It's on.
It's on.
It's
okay,
on.
Good.
And just leave it on. Don't turn it off.
All right. I won't fuss with it.
All right,
thank you. Yes, I am Eric Greening, and I would like to thank you for the stand you took to oppose Proposition 23. I realize it was not unanimous. There was a range of opinions. But I also realize that our county has already invested a great deal in the preparation of our climate action plan, and the cities throughout our county are also working on this. As a matter of fact, this evening, the Atascadero City Council is going to be considering the greenhouse gas inventory. And so the concern I would like to raise is if this thing passes, and it's not an initiative coming from the people of the state of California, it's an initiative sent over from the oil companies that are making massive contributions to try to get this thing passed. From the standpoint of voter education, where would it leave us if this thing was to pass? Right now, not only are we actively preparing a climate action plan pursuant to the legislation that it would undo, but we are integrating that climate action plan into other documents, the land use and circulation element, the Council of Governments Regional Transportation Plan, which for the first time ever is also called a Sustainable Community Strategy. And I realize that even if AB 32 went away, we might be able to sustain a little bit of momentum on some of these things that we've started simply because we choose to. But we would be in a climate that would be blowing a strong headwind against such efforts, because we would be in a climate where essentially dependence on the product of the oil companies is the modus operandi of the state, and susceptibility to whatever price manipulations, supply shortfalls, etc., occur would be the thing we would no longer be adapting to. So again, I would like to thank you for the position you took on Proposition 23, and I hope that the voters will pay close attention to it, and also that the community will get involved in the preparation of the climate action plan in the county and in whatever city you happen to live. This is serious business. Thank you.
Thank you. Gwen Taylor, please, followed by Susan Warren. I apologize for the sound system, so we'll have to use that microphone. Thank you.
Sound system has never been exactly the best here in this chamber. Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos. As we noted early on, haste can make waste. Each member of this board is a representative of this county. When supervisors use the media for publicity, the public assumes concurrence among the board, as the board is usually the deciding body of a project being publicized. Yet, the Los Osos Wastewater Project has not been accepted by this board. A $4 million grant and $83 million loan from the USDA is a drop in the bucket for a sewer project of the magnitude that we have in Los Osos. Yet Supervisor Gibson, in his infinite wisdom, is using the USDA grant and loan funding as the answer to the sewer cost, with a question as to the additional of rates and charges for this project. How much are the monthly costs to each homeowner? This is the question we not only want answered, but we need answered, and we demand the answer. People are very concerned. They do not know what is going on. And I know from what was said that we are supposed to have a review on the 28th. I hope that there is going to be some answers, not just more hyperbole that we have heard before and the spin of what we are going to have to spend. I hope we get some fact figures. Thank you.
Thank you. Susan Warren, please, followed by Elaine Watson. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Susan Warren, and I'm from Cambria. And I'm in recovery for 31 years. Former WINO, with the last proclamation you just gave. But I'm here to speak to addiction, which this is Recovery Month for recovery from addictions and various other substance use disorders. My concern is that we're the bottom of the barrel in this county. It's very frustrating when we have media and task forces being formed, and we're hiring county employees for obesity task forces, and now we're down to bee poop, you know, as of the Health Commission meeting last night. My frustration is where's the support for people in recovery? I beg all of you to please watch the Health Commission meeting that went on last night, and you'll see what I'm speaking about. We have lots of people up here speaking during public comment about all kinds of things, and we don't address the fact that we have people dying in this county every month. One of my volunteers who spoke last night finally stepped forward to tell a little of his story. He said since July, we've had 60-plus deaths directly or indirectly related to substance use disorders. You know, it's just unspeakable for that to continue to happen. And yet the only way substance abuse rises to the forefront here is, and I didn't even know Dan was on the agenda, I didn't look, but, you know, when we see this as a criminal justice issue, and it's time that we change that. The rest of the world is changing, but Slo County isn't. And just to let you know that I'm going to give you this handout, which comes from New Directions California, and it's part of the health care reform that's happening. Substance abuse disorders are going to be a part of every office visit in every primary care and ER room, and every physician is going to ask people, do you have a mental health issue? Do you have a substance abuse issue? How much do you drink? What kind of pills are you taking? And it's going to become commonplace. My concern is we're looking at a perfect storm, and we're not going to be prepared because they have to do what's called screening, brief intervention, and referral to treatment. What do we have in our county for treatment? And I'll tell you, the three of us, Lifestyles, Cambria Connection, North County Connection, and the various other meetings throughout the county that are there to serve on that very bottom rung of the ladder in keeping people in recovery, we can't absorb all that. And a lot of people need other kinds of treatment. So please, put us on your radar.
Thank you.
And I'm going to give you a copy of this video,
okay,
and hopefully you'll educate yourselves and then put it in the county library.
Thank you. Ms. Watson, you, please, followed by Lindy Owen.
Good morning, Elaine Watson of SOSOS. In response to a public comment at last week's board meeting, Mr. Gibson blamed the appeals at the Planning and Coastal Commissions for the fact that the county received only $4 million in USDA grant funding rather than the expected $16 million. Every single one of those issues that went to appeals had been brought to this board numerous times by members of the public and ignored. These issues obviously had credibility because they caused the Planning Commission to place over 100 conditions on the project. Then your changes to those conditions triggered the Coastal Commission hearing and the Substantial Issue hearing. I think it's fair to say that the county, in its refusal to listen to legitimate concerns of the public, the Planning Commission and the First Coastal Commission delayed the process unnecessarily. If those important issues had been addressed as they should have been and resolved here, we could have avoided those appeals and had the CDP earlier and been timely enough for the full $16 million grant. Another point. At the Coastal Commission hearing in January, Mr. Gibson referred to the bay as an environmental disaster and has made other references to pollution caused by septic tanks. Even Lois Capps echoed this opinion in a celebratory photo op by saying basically the project would stop pollution of the bay. At the July update, when Mr. Gibson was asking for additional funding to expedite the project timeline, he said that a six-month delay would result in 180 million gallons of improperly treated sewage going into the estuary. That's 1 million gallons a day. We've seen no data that supports this. However, there is data from two credible sources, the Moore Bay National Estuary and the San Luis Obispo Ecosystem Alliance. These sources show the creeks and tributaries have much higher levels of pollutants than the bay, and these all appear to be from non-human sources. As far as nitrates are concerned, the March numbers for the Back Bay and Los Osos were 1.21 milligrams per liter, likely due to rain runoff. June's numbers in the Back Bay were a very low 0.37 milligrams per liter. A recent brochure from the Moore Bay National Estuary shows the bay to be doing well with no inference to the kind of pollution referred to by Mr. Gibson. If indeed there is substantiating information supporting Mr. Gibson's claim, please produce it. And then probably post warning signs around the bay. Thank you.
Thank you. Lindy Owen, please, followed by Mr. Ben DePada.
Good morning, Lindy Owen from Los Osos. I'm afraid that Los Osos was supposed to be being kept updated on the sewer project. This was expenses that were set aside to give education to the community, bring forums for them, et cetera, and we haven't had any of that in the last 2 years. So I'm requesting that that be put back on the agenda because I'm stopped constantly and people are living in fear out there. When are we going to have to start paying? How much are we going to pay? There is no knowledge of that. There is no knowledge that we have a water basin that is in severe damage to saltwater intrusion. So what I'd like to go to is I'm having a real hard time understanding the math and then finding out how much more the county might decide that I should be paying and each homeowner should be paying. In the article in the Tribune that was just applauding this wonderful acquisition of a grant and the $4 million or the $4 million grant and the $83 million low interest loan, which isn't such a great loan, but you know, it's I guess not as good as 0 or 2%, but it's better than nothing. So let me, here are my paperwork. This is my paperwork that came in my ballot for the 218. It tells, clearly says that I would, that with that vote, that the total community assessed themselves for $127 million for this project, and that the empty lot owners assess themselves, would be assessing themselves in the second 218 for $27 million. Now, the second 218 is not passable unless people have really gone over the edge, because why would you pay for a sewer assessment each month when you have no water to build the house on the empty lot? In other words, that 218, please just take it off the radar. We're not going to, you're not going to pass it. You'll only spend more money trying to get it passed. So let's go back to first, Mr. Gibson said it was a $166 million project, yet when you applied for the USDA loan, you said it was a $181 million project. Take $181 million, subtract $127, which is the commitment that you have from the community. You have no other commitment of funds from any of us. That leaves $54 million that's just not existent. I don't know what tax base you're going to try to find this on, except for this grandiose idea to put it on rates and charges, which we have a choice to turn down, and we will turn down. The town committee will refuse to pay extra.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. Mr. DeFatta, please, and followed by Mr. Margetson.
Good morning, Supervisors. Ben DeFatta here and board. I see the county made the news again in the New Times last week, and for your information, many in this country are watching what you're doing to this economically disadvantaged community of Los Osos. I'm sure more of this county's business as usual shenanigans will be in the papers for many more to read about what is occurring in Los Osos. There are also several books in the working as we speak. And there, I notice you're all big contributors of your time and funds to many that are in need when a community or person is in trouble. Last week, Supervisor Hill united a lost dog to his previous owner, making many friends and supporters of Annie the dog joyful again. While Annie was missing, the owner was in much pain and distress of his faithful lost dog. What Mr. Hill did was the right thing to do, and I'm glad his intervention was successful. And I hope you're not falling asleep on me. Mr. Chairman, your board's next opportunity is to intercede for the people of Los Osos in helping to get rid of Mr. Gibson's unaffordable sewer project, because there are several thousand homeowners who are also feeling the pain and suffering caused by Mr. Gibson and his staff's wrong decision to build us an expensive, unaffordable, stinking, deep trench, flawed gravity collection bioelect treatment plant. When there are superior, affordable alternatives being used nationwide and worldwide right now. If Supervisor Hill and you other three don't intervene soon, Mr. Hill will have to when he becomes chairman next year. But who knows what will happen between now and then. Chairman Meacham and your board, and especially Mr. Gibson, this isn't a game anymore. If you're using this project for political ambitions or monetary gains, it's not funny anymore. It's becoming criminal with its mounting costs and inability for several thousand unable to pay off these loans and rate charges Supervisor Gibson is scheming up for us at this very moment. People all over are wising up to this county's and water board's past shenanigans right down to meanness, to downright meanness to the people of Los Osos. Stop this costly sewer project and do the right thing now. The future cost of this project combined with today's economy and unemployment problems have caused many of our people to become fearful and frustrated with what is happening to them by you five. Mr. Cacho, a few weeks ago you were buying drinks and munchies for everyone when Mr. Gibson's gravity sewer project achieved another milestone, one that will throw out of their homes several thousand homeowners that reside in the prohibition zone. Many in this little village are spending half of their income for housing, taxes, and maintenance. I want to put a pitch in for Mr. Duval's. I hope you guys vote for his project.
Thank you, Mr. Duval. Mr. Margeson, please, and followed by Mr. Blair. We have to use that one over there, Bob.
Good morning. Richard Margeson. Last week, gentlemen, you heard Mr. Gibson state that the monthly cost of this wastewater project for Los Osos will be $160 a month under certain circumstances. I'd like to know what those circumstances are going to be, because I've run the numbers every which way, and there's no way that it's $160 a month. So it's going to be very interesting at the update to see how this is spun. He also stated that the difference between the $16 million grant we were anticipating and the $4 million grant would have only reduced the cost $5, or an additional $5. Based on that premise, $166 million project, if $12 million you can finance for $5 a month per homeowner, then $166 million project you should be able to finance for $70 a month. Because what Mr. Gibson forgot to tell you was the reduction of $5 didn't include interest. If you're not getting $12 million and you have to turn around and finance $12 million, you're not getting just the principal, you're not paying just principal, you're paying interest. You can't have it both ways. The spin from this on this project cannot be both ways to fit the circumstances at the time. We heard that we would have gotten the $16 million if we hadn't have had appeals. One of the appeals came from two coastal commissioners specifically because Mr. Gibson changed the wording from basin to valley. That triggered one of the sets of appeals that you had to come back and do a resolution on to change. I read the transcript again, the exact transcript of Mr. Patterson and Mr. Gibson's interaction that day. Members of the audience were trying to get you to understand that it needed to be the basin. But it's easy when you have the last chance at the microphone each week to spin it the direction you want for the next week, and that's why we're here week after week. There's no way this project, with the repayment of the loan, the monthly O&M, and the on-lot cost is $160 a month. It doesn't even say that in your application to the USDA.
Mr. Blair, please, and followed by Mr. Barrow. And ladies and gentlemen, we have to use this one over here. This is the only microphone we have that's functioning right now.
Morning, gentlemen. Morning. Blair, Rural Grande. I've showed you this before, and I need to refresh your memory. This is 93420. That's the Summit Station area where I live. We're part of Aurora Grande. Now, I read in the paper where the people in the Pomo don't want to tax themselves for the Willow Road extension, so you took money from one of the projects in Aurora Grande, mainly the Dale Avenue configuration of the interchange there. Now, you've redone Stanton, and you've redone Pomeroy. Put a turn lane in. There's no sight distance of problems in either of those two intersections. I don't think there's ever been an accident at any of those intersections. Dale Avenue, there has been numerous, multiple car accidents at this turning place. When you come up the hill, you cannot see. There's been a lot of people injured, a lot of people gone to the hospital. My neighbor, only because she had a Volvo with a double roof, knocked her upside down, and she's hanging upside down, spinning around like a top in the middle of the intersection. And now you've canceled this funding again. I have been in here numerous times. Cacho knows I've been here numerous times on this intersection. Other people have been in here numerous times. And now again, for 2 years, you've been delaying the funding. I think we've got our homeowners association has an excellent case for negligence. If somebody seriously gets hurt from our neighborhood, trying to cross this intersection. You need to put this money back into Arroyo Grande. It's not Napomo's money. We were annexed into the Napomo Community Service District only for the water district. We are part of Arroyo Grande, and that's not, Napomo's money to take. This money needs to go back into this intersection so somebody doesn't get killed out there. We have a highway patrol, new resident up there who's going to research, find out, list all the people who have been hurt, all the people who have gone to the hospital, and just add it up. And if worse comes to worse, then our homeowners association will take action if somebody gets hurt. I mean, this is real safety. There's been serious accidents. I caught you those, and you can read the police reports. I mean, every day they get banged up out there. And you have to really pay attention. I appreciate the fact that you put up a big sign that says a yellow thing that says there's a bad intersection coming up, but it needs to have a turn lane, and it needs to be addressed now, not 2 years or when somebody gets killed out there. Thank you very much.
Blair? Barrow, please, followed by Mr. Golden.
Good morning. Thank you. My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low-Income Housing. I have two issues today. One is the affordability for the Los Osos Wastewater Project, and the other is the Safe Parking Lot Program that's being promoted. The USDA guidelines and regulations for affordability would indicate that $73 a month would be the high end of affordability for cost for the ratepayers for a sewer. The federal guidelines for ARRA have similar regulations, and you really need to read the project regulations, the first application, the pre-application, and the final application to see if they match up with these guidelines and the environmental requirements. And I would have to say that there was a presentation to the county by the STEPSAG team, which was Ripley, W.M. Lyles, and Peters, and they guaranteed that their project would include gravity sewer wherever it was appropriate and STEPSAG, and that the cost would be 50% lower than the gravity system that you're now considering. So that was a missed opportunity because you dismissed them out of hand. Your staff did. A 50% savings on an appropriate technology. So the stimulus funds come with rules about affordability and choosing the most affordable project that you possibly can do that's viable. And we've seen in the fine screening, the Planning Commission, that STEPSAG is a viable alternative. There was no doubt about it. And that was an award-winning environmental review. So that is an issue that has not been settled yet. The Safe Parking Lot Program, as I worked with Mayor Dave Romero last week and his planner, Phil Dunsmore, and they're putting it through their process. And the site that we chose, the picture is up there on the board. The site that we chose is that site up there, and it would host about 15 vehicles. Also working with the homeless coordinator for the school district, who says there's a great need for this, and they support it. So we are collaborating with as many groups as possible to bring this into fruition, including a countywide effort for churches and private businesses, industrial, to accommodate people as they wish as well. So wish us luck. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow. Mr. Golden, please, and followed by Brian Reynolds.
Good morning. I'm going to read you some statistics that I obtained online from a source which is HTTP nationalpriorities.org. The cost of all U.S. wars since 2001 is $1,079,000,000,000. I'm rounding these figures off. I'll give you the exact figures which you can look at. The cost of the war in Iraq since that time is over 747 billion. The cost of the war in Afghanistan is over 332 billion. Taxpayers in San Luis Obispo County will pay $111 million for the proposed total Iraq and Afghanistan war spending in fiscal year 2011. For the same amount of money, the following could have been provided. And again, I'm rounding off the numbers. 33,000 people receive low-income health care for 1 year, or 105,000 households with renewable electric wind power for 1 year, or over 1,000 police or sheriff's officers for 1 year, or over 1,000 firefighters for 1 year, or over 33,000 scholarships for university students for 1 year. Over 20,000 students receiving Pell Grants of over $5,000 each. Almost 59,000 children receiving low-income health care for 1 year. Or over 12,000 Head Start slots for children for 1 year. Over 39,000 households with renewable electricity, solar photovoltaic for 1 year, or over 1,000 elementary school teachers for 1 year, or almost 12,000 military veterans receiving VA care for 1 year. We need to reorder our priorities. Many communities, counties, and cities throughout the country have taken a position against this continual spending of money on war instead
Thank
of
you, Mr.
on
Bowman.
People.
Thank you. Ms. Reynolds, please.
Good morning, Honorable Board. Brian Reynolds, Library Director. I would like to highlight a very important event coming up this weekend, September 19th. It's our 11th annual Central Coast Book and Author Festival, I think. It'll be bigger and better than ever before, a chance for families to meet authors, to buy books, especially local authors. The proceeds benefit our Library Foundation, which in turn reinvests that money in summer reading programs for youth countywide, for which the registration and participation rates and completion rates are increasing every year. So my main purpose is to remind you that this is happening, to let the listening audience and the audience here in the room know that it's happening. There's a bunch of events, including Saturday night, an evening with cartoonist Lee Rubin, a costume breakfast Sunday morning, art of the book display, and then many other events throughout the day. So I encourage you to think about attending or telling your friends. It's a wonderful family event, good for the community. Thank you.
Mr. Reynolds? Patterson, your light on?
Oh, I'm sorry, yeah.
Oh, okay. That concludes public comment.
Actually, I did have it on now that...
I turned it back on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to follow up with Mr. Greening's comments about Proposition 23. Sea Change, which is the Strategic Energy Alliance for Change, is sponsoring an education forum on Proposition 23 October 14th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the San Luis Obispo City County Library. We'll be having a forum with speakers who are in support of Proposition 23 as well as those that oppose it. So if you're interested in getting more information about Proposition 23, October 14th, San Luis Obispo City County Library, 6 p.m. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to move into board business at this point. Madam Clerk, if you'd introduce the first item, please, which is C1.
C1, a request to continue the hearing on the request by Sunny Acres Incorporated and Dan Duvall to waive building permit fees and public facility fees for a new single-family dwelling of approximately 8,000 square feet, 2nd District. Recommend the board continue this public hearing off calendar and direct staff to re-notice the hearing once the appeal of the court order is completed.
Thank you. And as being recommended, this is going to be asked to be continued, but this is a public hearing that's been noticed, so we will do such. Mr. Bissell. I'm not sure that microphone's working. I'm going to grab that one over there.
The wireless mic.
Dias. For some reason, we're having difficulty with these. It's ready? Okay, try it now, John. This is something that we are going to be working on to try to correct this horrendous system, so we'll get it fixed. Mr. Purcell.
Dan Duval and Sunny Acres have requested a waiver of building permit and public facility fees for a new single-family dwelling of approximately 8,000 square feet. Staff is prepared to bring a recommendation to your board today. However, there's been litigation on this property. There was a court order that was issued in July of this year and a very recent appeal of that court order. And because of that, County Council is recommending that we ask the board to continue this item until the appeal is resolved. That's what we're recommending at this time. That would conclude my comments.
Thank you, sir. County Council want to comment at all at this point?
Being in a grantee County Council's office, yes, Mr. Chairman, there was a recent appeal that was filed on August 30th appealing the court's order granting the county's motion for a preliminary injunction. The recommendation that appeal has stayed enforcement or inspection or any court action relative to that order.
Okay, thank you. I have no speakers from the board at this point, but Mr. Duval, you have a speaker slip, sir. And could you use this microphone over here, I believe? Good morning.
Good morning, Chairman Makem and board. Thank you for allowing me to speak. It is important that we be allowed to continue with this 8,000 square foot building. The problem is what is being used in temporary instead of the building that is being built. Nobody knows how long this appeal is going to take. We have put a great amount of money, time, and effort into working with the building department trying to get this building going. And it would be an extreme travesty to shut down this project or postpone it. In effect, nobody knows how long the appeal is going to take. And the building, which resolves the issues that are before the court, would be resolved if the building was finished. I beg of every one of you supervisors to see the light here that we are doing the work that is really needed. And we need to go forward with this. By going forward with the building and by you allowing the fee waiver, you are in no way impeding what the court is going to do, or it has no effect on it. And again, I beg you people to allow the right thing to happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Duval. Mr. Burrow?
I'd like to rise in support of Dan Duval's project. It's a worthy project. It saves the county a lot of money. I'm an affordable housing advocate, and he's providing affordable housing to high-need clients that are very difficult to serve. And he's providing them with a way out of addiction into a productive life. So I feel like this is a worthy cause, and the county should make every effort possible to allow him to continue to serve that population. Otherwise, they will be served in your local jails. They will be living in the creek. They will be rescinding back into drug use and dealing drugs in the homeless population. So it's really critical that you allow him and give him a hand in letting him continue his efforts, and I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Thank you. My last request, Susan Warren, please.
I'm Susan Warren.
we really need to help Dan with this project for the county. He is doing something out of the goodness of his heart for us. I have someone at my center right now who's from the shelter in Atascadero at Echo, and she's covering my phones for me. She just told me that this week they've turned away 30 families, not just the singles. She said there's no beds for the singles, the single men, the single women, because they have so many families with children that are having to go into the shelter right now, and they're hugely overwhelmed, and we don't see that getting any better. I'd say we're in a crisis, and we really need the housing that Dan provides. He is keeping those people out of your jails, out of your emergency rooms, and away from the coroner. You know, it's that simple. I hope that you can find, with the different funds that are out there, we should be paying Dan. The county taxes, the county money should go to Dan to provide his nonprofit transitional housing. That's what it is. It helps people get out there and become a productive member of their community. And if they can't hold a job, at least they're not costing us through law enforcement, hospitalizations, and everything else out there, just for vagrancy. Whatever it is, they're costing us money. Why can't we flip this coin, spend the money on helping them heal and helping them be a part of our community? That's who comes and volunteers at my centers, are the ones that aren't able to work. I didn't have my speakers here that were there at the Health Commission last night because they're all out working today, paying taxes. And they spend their evenings and their weekends helping other people stay in recovery, just like Dan does. Like I've said, we're at a perfect storm. The worse the economy gets, the more people are going to melt down, and whether they're relapsing or it's going to just increase their use, whether it's substance abuse or anything else. That's their coping skill for what's going on in the economy right now. They lose their homes. They're sleeping in cars in a parking lot if they have a car to sleep in. You know, we need to help. This is just a huge, huge crisis in the country. And the advantage is we're a small county. We can jump out there and do something and help our folks. And I know Mr. Hill, and you've all done little bits and pieces, but it's coming to a crisis level. And the thing is the flip side of this is they're going to save us money in the long run if we help these people heal and keep them well. Please support Dan. And I know it. I have personal experience how long it takes to go through the county planning
Thank you.
Systems.
So thank you.
Do it now.
Dawn, please. That's my last request.
Lindy Owen Los Osos. I just wanted to highly support both comments the last speakers had. And I do believe it's really time to, I'm not sure what the tug and push issue has been in the past, but I think Mr. Duvall has actually provided a role model for the county to look at further opening up of some kind of facilities to help people with abuse system problems, health issues, and homelessness. At this point, I really only see the answer to homelessness is building some nice bushes for everybody to live under. When are you going to take action? When are you going to stop kicking people out of their homes in Los Osos over things that, you know, they have no control over? It's about time, I think, that you look at Mr. Duvall's situation and get some help in and get that thing open and ready for the winter and make it be role model number one. And I'd like to see 10 more opened in the next year. Mr. Hill, that's my challenge to you. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to bring it back to the board. I have county council and staff as well. County council first.
Yes, Warren Jensen, county council. Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to elaborate a little bit on Ms. Negrante's comments. The concern that we have is with an appeal pending, Mr. Duvall is attempting to completely undo the enforcement proceeding. So were you to grant a fee waiver at this point, you really wouldn't know what you were ending up with until we have that appeal resolved. That's the reason for the recommendation. It's not, as some of the speakers seem to think, taking a position on whether there ultimately would be a fee waiver. That's merely being recommended for postponement until Well, we have the appeal resolved.
That's staff's light.
Thank you, Cammie Griffin, County Planning. I just wanted to provide the board with some information about the pending building permit that this fee waiver was requested for. Mr. Duvall did pay the initial building permit fee, and so there is a building permit in that is not complete. We are still awaiting additional information from Mr. Duvall, so we are would be able to complete a plan check. The initial fee payment does cover that initial plan check, so if Mr. Duvall were to give us the additional information that is needed to have a complete building permit application, the county would continue to do the plan check, the initial plan check, on that building permit. So postponing this decision today doesn't postpone, delay, or otherwise put on hold any action on this building permit as fees were paid, the initial fees were paid. So I did want to make that clear today. We are currently, the project is on hold because we need more information from Mr. Duvall.
Okay. Mr. Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So just following up on that, based on fees paid and absent any extraordinary fact that comes into effect in an environmental or otherwise, basically this permit could get all but issued based on monies already received by the planning department.
That's correct. The, okay. The remaining portion of the fees are due at issuance.
Okay. I'd like to just turn back to County Council then. You know, what's before us here is a fee waiver request, not a decision on the application itself, which is in fact ministerial in that it does not require any public hearing, that standards are met, that permit gets issued, except that I wonder if County Council could talk briefly about the relationship between the court order and appeal and the nuisance abatement and how that affects issuance of a permit at this point.
Mean in Negrante County Council's office, one of the difficulties is that our ordinance provides that a building permit cannot be issued while the violations are outstanding on the property, and the order on the preliminary injunction addressed a number of those violations with regard to the illegal structures and the habitation of those structures.
So basically the court order and our previous abatement efforts are one and the same thing in essence, or cover the same topics.
The preliminary injunction order handles a portion of the issues with related to the illegal structures and habitation of the structures.
So Mr. Chairman, based on the fact that the planning department is willing to continue processing Mr. Duvall's permit, and the critical path here really is the abatement of the nuisances, that fees have been paid, that no delay is pending, I will move that we continue the fee waiver request off calendar.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Supervisor Gibson and a second by Supervisor Patterson to continue off calendar. Roll call, please.
Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Asajan?
Aye.
And Mr. Meacham?
Yes. Our final item.
D1, a report on the preliminary feasibility for establishing a county redevelopment plan and agency, all districts. Item continued from September 7, 2010. Receive report and instruct staff to prepare a work program and schedule and report back on December 7, 2010.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This was continued from your last board meeting. It is a discussion of whether or not you would want the department to continue to look into the potential for establishing a redevelopment agency here in the county. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Dana Lilly to begin the presentation.
Mr. Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dana Lilly with your planning staff. Along with me are two other staff members that you probably have met them before, but we'll introduce anyway because they were involved in preparing this item. Across from me is Jeffrey Legato from our mapping and GIS section, and next to me is Erilyn Singwall from Current Planning. Both have some experience in redevelopment previous to coming to the county as they work for consultants. And now I'll proceed. Back in 2004, with the help of a consultant, the county completed a feasibility study to determine whether whether and how much extent of the county's unincorporated communities would be eligible for redevelopment as a tool to use to help finance some of the needed infrastructure in those towns. And while the consultant's recommendations were that it would be feasible in most of the county's unincorporated communities, there was a lot of public concerns expressed, and the county chose not to proceed at that time. Now, if we roll to the future, to the present, not the future, since then, the county's continued to experience challenges in financing infrastructure to support the development of its towns as envisioned in the general plan. The county's continued to experience challenges in funding affordable housing needed for its residents. So the department chose to take another look at that feasibility analysis and update it for just two of the towns and see, have things changed dramatically? Would it still be legally and financially feasible to use redevelopment primarily as a tool for financing infrastructure? And that led to the report today. And we focused only as examples on Oceano and San Miguel. In no way is staff suggesting that redevelopment would make sense only in those towns. We just chose two that seemed like very appropriate towns to staff, and with the limited amount of staff time, updated it for those two towns. Now, what is redevelopment? Redevelopment is a financing tool. It's not the general plan. It's not zoning. It doesn't raise taxes. But it is a financing tool that cities and counties can use to finance different things that are needed to, in one way of describing it is to remove obstacles to economic development that would otherwise occur if those obstacles weren't there. As an example of the types of obstacles that we're aware of, and I'll pick on San Miguel for a moment, staff is aware that there are some drainage improvements that are needed. And several years ago, a private developer was interested in pursuing a commercial development that was consistent with the community's design plan. But the developer realized quickly that he would not be able to proceed because the cost of the drainage improvements alone would be more than he could afford. So he did not proceed at that time. That's just one example. Now, how does redevelopment work? Under redevelopment, as property taxes in the county increase, when properties are sold or new developments occur, a portion of the increase in property taxes goes to the redevelopment agency. And that cash flow provides a source of repaying debt. So if the county has a redevelopment agency, it uses that sliver of new increases in property taxes, also called the tax increment, to have a repayment source to issue redevelopment bonds. Now, the redevelopment financing is used to address the needs that are in a redevelopment plan. So it's not a blank check to do any kind of improvements that the county might choose. They must be consistent with what is in the plan for items that were identified that are holding back the local economy. And drainage and roads are two prime examples the county's experiencing now. Now, who controls a redevelopment agency? The county, if a county redevelopment agency would really have two options. One, your board of supervisors would also sit as the board of directors of the redevelopment agency. However, if your board chose and you created a redevelopment agency, you could designate a new body to make the decisions for the redevelopment agency. Staff probably wouldn't recommend that, but it's definitely an option available to the county. Now, what is a project area? Project area is a term defined under state law. It is a confined geographic area that is covered by the redevelopment plan and from which the tax increment flows. So if you have a county, let's say a county-wide redevelopment agency, and you have selected pockets, which are our towns, that are the project areas, you don't collect tax increment from all over the county. You only collect it from those project areas. And the tax increment that you collect from one project area must be reinvested back into that project area to address the conditions that are holding back the economy. Now, there are options about project areas, and it's a significant issue for redevelopment in a county jurisdiction. Our numerous towns, 10 or 11 or 12 of them that might be feasible for redevelopment, could be considered a single project area. We could just call them sub-areas of one project area. Under that scenario, the county could issue bonds from the tax increment coming from all of them early and do a project in just one of the communities as soon as there was financing capacity. It's probably the most cost-efficient and probably the option that would provide financing the earliest for projects is to have one project area with each town being a sub-area. The other option is for each town to be its own project area. Under that scenario, it will take longer for the tax increment to get to the point to justify issuing bonds and therefore having financing for projects, but it would provide some assurance to the residents of each of those towns that tax increment generated by development in their town will be reinvested in their town and won't be pooled and partially reinvested elsewhere in the county. Another fun topic is eminent domain. The county has the power of eminent domain now and uses it sparingly, as you know. Some redevelopment agencies have the power of eminent domain. So if they need to acquire property from a property owner who does not want to sell, they can compel the property owner to sell that property at fair market value for a public purpose. And I would have to mention, it is optional whether, if the county creates a redevelopment agency, it give that agency the power of eminent domain. That will be a choice the county can make. Another fun topic is, can the state take our redevelopment funds? As you well know, in the recent past, the state did take redevelopment funds from some local redevelopment agencies. Not a pleasant prospect for a county. The county now collects the property taxes and gets its share. And if it created a redevelopment agency and the state took some of those, it's tantamount to creating a redevelopment agency and then allowing the state to take property taxes that would otherwise have been under your discretion for spending. There is a court action still pending between the redevelopment agents, the California Association of Redevelopment. I said that wrong. But we don't know how the outcome of that court case will end up. However, on the ballot, there is a ballot measure, I believe it's Proposition 22, that on its face would prohibit the state from doing this again. Also under redevelopment law, 20% of the tax increment must be set aside for low and moderate income housing. It doesn't have to be for new housing. It can be to rehabilitate existing housing that's occupied by moderate income households, for example. I'm moving quickly through the staff report because we assumed you would have some questions. As you'll notice in the staff report, our estimates for how much tax increment would be available to repay debt in these two towns does reflect the range, and that's based on our assumptions of how would assessed values and therefore property taxes from these towns rise over the 45-year lifetime of a redevelopment agency. And redevelopment agencies only exist for 45 years and then they're gone. In San Miguel, under what we think are conservative estimates for that 45-year period, we don't know what the next handful of years will bring, but 45 years, there should be a growth in assessed value. For San Miguel, we think between 12 and 17 million for tax increment available to repay debt for projects. So it's not 12 to 17 million dollars in projects, it's what's available to repay debt. So the projects would actually be somewhat less. We've not costed that out. In Oceano, it would be greater, 53 to 69 million. And even in those ranges, those could be a significant portion of what we see as a funding shortfall now for some already identified needs for drainage improvements and road improvements in those towns. And we've listed some of the examples very generically in your staff report. In San Miguel, we know there's needs for additional drainage improvements, safe sidewalks to school and downtown, and continuation of the improvements to the downtown commercial area. Somewhat similar in Oceano, needs for drainage improvements, also safe sidewalks, downtown enhancements, and an upgrade to the sewer treatment plant. Staff's conclusions for you today are that we believe that 9 of our unincorporated communities are probably appropriate and eligible for redevelopment. And as property values increase, the power of redevelopment financing itself will increase. And also, before I recap on the recommendations, there's an important point to be made here. If I don't make it, the auditor may make it for me, which is under redevelopment, a portion of property taxes, particularly in the initial years of a redevelopment agency, that would otherwise have been discretionary revenue available for your board to determine how to be spent, will be dedicated to the agency for the projects. If the financing that is generated by the redevelopment agency results in projects that are not picked very carefully and don't result in private investment and new development, then you could say that the redevelopment agency has, I don't want to say wasted the money, but has not used it in the most productive manner, and the net result is less revenue available for county services and to support county staff. On the converse of that, if the investments from the redevelopment agency are strategic and they result in new development or development earlier than it would have occurred otherwise, then new property taxes will be generated when those properties are reassessed, and the foregone revenue that went to the redevelopment agency should be made up, if not more than made up. Now, this is a very preliminary item for your board today. What we are really asking you is, do you want staff to continue working on it at all? And if so, would you direct us to come back to you December 7th with a work program and a better idea of how much of preparing the redevelopment plan and the associated environmental impact report can the Planning and Building Department do in-house with existing staff and existing budget? It is possible that some pieces of it we will need to hire out to consultants, and we will give an estimate on that December 7th. If we're not ready, then we'll come back and ask to continue it. But we think we can bring back that information on December 7th. And if your board wishes at that point, you could direct us to initiate the program. It will probably be a 1 to 2 year process to prepare a plan and the EIR. That concludes this staff presentation.
Okay, I have just two quick questions, if I could, then I'm going to go to my colleagues. One is, once you, if the board were to go in that direction and establish project area committees in each of these communities, would the community itself vote on the ability to have a redevelopment agency, or is that determined by the board?
It is determined by the board.
Okay. And the second question is, if you get, let's say you get 10, 15 years down the road and you don't want to be in the redevelopment agency, you don't want to be a redevelopment area any longer, how do you get out of that, and what are the consequences?
By that point, you will have incurred debt that the agency must repay.
Okay.
It may be possible to amend the redevelopment plan and exclude a community, but that could result in a serious shortfall of revenue needed to repay the debt.
Mr. Sajjan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple questions. The first one, staff, how many of the communities you need to participate in order for this to move forward? I think last time we had a problem when not everybody came into the picture, couldn't move forward.
We think that even if there was only one community, it would probably be feasible to proceed.
Other questions, if I may. December 7th doesn't give you enough time to visit all the advisory councils or interested groups within communities for a full-blown presentation in their own backyard. Give me your timing frame as how you plan on working with the communities of unincorporated areas.
That's a good question. Based on our past experience, the roughly two months before December 7th, it would probably be difficult to get to all of the advisory councils to get on their agenda and make a presentation and answer their questions. We could certainly get to quite a few of them, but if your board would prefer, we make sure that we can get to all advisory councils. We might want to pick a date further out or report to you on December 7th as a progress report.
Any possibilities that you might hold a set of two, three communities separately if they're geographically nearby, maybe hold a town hall meeting to combine efforts?
Certainly.
The other, certainly I have, anytime we have a consultant coming, obviously there's a cost. What would they charge? Their motto is, we're here to sell this product rather than this is what it is and how it works and doesn't work. Bring examples of nearby communities. If we're talking about South County, let's say, I know the cities of Rural Region, Royal Grande have used them. If they're happy, not happy, folks from their communities to come and speak of their experiences. Something as you brought up, eminent domain, blight, those are very, very negative ways of looking at projects. Wish there were different wording that wouldn't be so blight. Those are kind of some of the concerns, and I hope as we move forward, we'll have some solid answers. Personally, I don't want to rush into this, simply because I want to see that the communities do have the proper time to look into this and have a good understanding how forward, either supporting or opposing.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Supervisor Sajjan that I think it would be of value for us to have representatives from communities who have redevelopment agencies or have experience with redevelopment agencies to come and share those experiences with us. There's one example in our staff report that I'm sure Chairman Meacham knows about, and that's Paso Robles, and they've had some very good successes with it. And I know Atascadero has as well, and there may be other communities that have not had such good experiences, and it would be good to hear from them so we know what we can expect. And Mr. Lilly, just a quick question to make sure that I'm clear on what you're requesting, and that is direction from this board on whether or not we want staff to continue to look into establishing redevelopment agencies and creating redevelopment plans for communities throughout the county and incorporated communities. And you've got, and the persons of Mr. Singelwald and Mr. Legato and yourself, experience on staff with redevelopment agencies, and this initial effort would be solely by staff to explore the options and then come back to us and make recommendations on what it would take to move forward, which could include additional costs to hire consultants. But this initial effort is strictly a staff effort. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
Bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lilly, am I correct in assuming that the composition of redevelopment agencies in counties and cities is pretty typically the Board of Supervisors or the City Councils? That's common practice?
That is, as far as I know, that's exclusively the practice.
Exclusively the practice, yeah. It scares me to think of more democracy. The other question is, do we, on the sort of choosing to look at it in specific project areas or countywide, and I favor the project areas, I wonder if you or any of your colleagues there know of other counties that have enacted a redevelopment agency in this fashion so that it would be targeting specific areas and allowing for that tax increment monies to be exclusively spent in those towns.
Yes, and yes, we do. I would ask Erlen, do you know of any that do not do that? Where they have just sub areas?
Erlen Thingwald, planning. I don't know of any that don't do it that way.
So essentially, exclusively, we've seen counties that are doing it with the different sub areas.
That's correct.
Okay, good. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah. Okay, well, I'll open this up to the public. I have no other lights on at this point. Mr. Wynn, followed by Mr. Harrison.
Good morning, Chairman Meacham, supervisors. My name is Mike Wynn, and I'm from Napomo. I'm here to argue that you should postpone this for 6 months and do virtually nothing in that time. A couple of reasons. One, by January or February, you will know whether Prop 22 passed or failed. And if it passed, then there are certain assurances that the tax increment could, in fact, be kept by the community and not taken by the state. Right now, we don't know how that's going to go. You will also know, if you put it off 6 months, you'll know whether there are significant legal challenges to Prop 22 if it does pass. And that's something else I should think you'd want to know. To spend valuable staff time when it's very limited and you're understaffed now on something that's speculative like this that may in fact have very little future, I think is untimely. It can be a wonderful idea. It may well be a good idea. I think you'll know better in 6 months than you do now. Secondly, I would remind you that a couple of things. Redevelopment works really well, I think, in incorporated cities where the community where the project takes place has planning powers and can make the decisions on a local basis. Unincorporated areas where the decision makers do not live there, do not have a long-term stake in the community, do not generally have such good results. I would remind you, for example, that in Old Town Napomo, your board, with Mr. Shadjian's leadership, spent nearly $3.5 million on sidewalks, curbs, gutters, a new drainage system, antique lights, street furniture, all kinds of things in the Old Town project. And then in the last 2 years, you spent another $3 million updating the culverts on South Thompson and on Mallet. In other words, over $6 million spent on the kind of infrastructure that we're talking about with redevelopment. Not one single project has been built. Not one, and by the way, this was done before the downturn in the economy, before the housing bubble burst. And one of the problems is simply that landowners, once you do all that improvement, they have a much higher concept of what their land is actually worth. And so it doesn't pencil out. If you do decide to go ahead, let me suggest three things. One, don't sneak this past the community on December 7th. It's not a good date. It's inauspicious. Secondly, do share them with the community advisory councils, particularly in the communities that are likely at all to have such projects. And third, keep an open mind to the eminent domain option. It's not desirable, but in some cases, without it, you can't make it work. Thank you.
Mr. Wynn, I think Mr. Hill has a question for you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wynn, if I could ask you about one of your assertions here. You're saying that experiences is that it's worked well in incorporated cities but not in incorporated towns. I wonder if you could tell me what you base that on, if there's something...
I've heard anecdotally about Paso Robles, and I have no personal knowledge. But back in 2003 and 4, the county put together a series of tours. County Council, Planning Department, others. We went to Ventura. We went out east of Ventura. We looked at a number of redevelopment projects that worked in the cities, and they were outstanding. What they did to revitalize the inner city was great. We haven't seen one example of an unincorporated community where the community felt that it was worthwhile. Now, but if you can bring us examples that are comparable, we'd love to see them, but we haven't seen any so far.
Thank you.
Mr. Harrison, please, and followed by Jerry Roy, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, my name is Jim Harrison. I'm also from the FOMO. I think that creating a redevelopment agency can be a good deal. And I do have experience with redevelopment agencies in incorporated areas because I worked for another county for a number of years, and it worked. And you can check with Goleta. The redevelopment agency worked, and in fact, they became incorporated after the fact that they'd had a redevelopment agency for a number of years. But you have to make sure that you do it right, as your staff has said. If you do the redevelopment agency, make sure that you do it to where that all the money that's raised from a certain area goes back to that area. It may take a little longer, but I know that the Mesa, there's a general feeling that the county's taken funds from there and spent them in other places. I'm not saying they did. I'm just saying that's a general feeling that people that live on the Mesa, because of the growth that occurred in the Mesa and the infrastructure that hasn't been built. And I do realize that you're working on the infrastructure, and I appreciate that. Eminent domain, I wouldn't give that up. I wouldn't put it as in the forefront, but if you give it up totally and you do have a project that needs to go through and you have one property owner, you might need it. So I wouldn't give it up, but I wouldn't put it out in the forefront as a thing that needs to be done. And I would also put a hold on this until we find out if the state's going to take the funds, because if the state takes the funds, it's not going to help any of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harrison. Mr. Roy, please, and followed by Eric Greening. I'm not sure how they do work. I'm sorry. Mr. Roy, can you hand him that microphone over there, please? Thank you. We're having trouble with our podium microphones.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman Meacham, members of the board. My name is Jerry Ryu. I'm the executive director of the Housing Trust Fund. I'm here to encourage you to move forward on plans to study redevelopment and ultimately to establish an agency and one or more project areas. Redevelopment is a very important tool that can be used to eliminate blight and encourage economic vitality in our communities. I've worked with redevelopment both as a community member and a professional over the past 30 years. Over 30 years ago, I was on a committee that brought a redevelopment agency into North Central Pasadena, where I lived. The neighborhoods got together and asked the redevelopment agency to help our neighborhood shopping area. The grocery store had closed, a lot of other businesses had left, and redevelopment enabled the city to consolidate the parking so that it was more usable and to attract a new market to the area. It was very successful. I've also worked, my last position was with the city of Watsonville. We used redevelopment funds to help first-time home buyers to rehabilitate owner-occupied homes and apartments, and to subsidize new apartment buildings. It was a very important part to the city's affordable housing program. It can help our program in the county as well. Prior to that, I worked for the county of Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz County also had a very successful redevelopment program. I encourage you to look at redevelopment and move forward with the staff recommendation. I'd also like to comment that the biggest complaint that people have had over the years with eminent domain is taking a person's home and giving it to a business. That many believe that's the biggest abuse of redevelopment. That is no longer possible due to Prop 99. And owner-occupied single-family homes are not eligible for eminent domain except for clearly public purposes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rowe. Mr. Greening, and followed by Meg Williamson.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and first I would like to completely agree with Mr. Wynn that there's no point in making a decision. We can't make an informed decision until we know the fate of Proposition 22 and whether it receives any challenges. Plus, Pearl Harbor Day just doesn't seem propitious for that kind of a decision. Another point, we need to cooperate with and get buy-in from school districts. They can be affected just as local government. In other words, the siphoning off of revenue stream, as I understand it, and I'm seeing Mr. Grant shaking his head, so perhaps that has changed since it was originally on the table in Atascadero, but if there is going to be any effect on school districts, I would certainly hope you would invite Mr. Crocker and people from the school districts, and I'd like some clarification on that if it has changed, because I've heard objections from school districts when redevelopment has been considered in other areas due to their own vulnerability to tax increment financing as it would affect them. I recognize that the eminent domain issue isn't quite as directly personal as it was in terms of taking of private homes, but I still see a constitutional affront with the taking of any private property if it's going to be given to another private entity, even if it's for an alleged public purpose. And the psychological effect of being decreed as blight so that your property can be taken by someone else, that whole thing just doesn't feel right. But I think my biggest concern is with the assumption that land values are going to rise, and always going to rise, and bubbles are always going to inflate without ever popping. If experience hasn't taught us that what goes up sometimes comes down, then I think we need to reevaluate some of the experiences we've recently had. I would like a honest, forthright discussion of who holds the bag. Who holds the debt? Who is responsible for paying off the debt when land values fall? And this can happen even to a competently run redevelopment agency that makes good choices if the broader economic environment is full of popping bubbles. We may not be able to help it. We may have falling land values in spite of everything we do. And who holds the bag? Thank you.
Williamson, please. That's my final request. Good morning. You're welcome.
Good morning, Chairman Meacham and board. Meg Williamson, City of Paso Robles. And I'm here to tell you a little bit about some of the challenges and successes that have occurred in Paso Robles due to us establishing our redevelopment agency. And I do recognize that there could be differences, but there are still some similarities in terms of the powerfulness of the tool. My perspective is somewhat anecdotal over 24 years of working for the city, first as a city planner and then as a city administrator. But we do also have statistics that would support the success of the tax increment and putting the area in place. The assessed value of our plan area has grown over 325% since its inception in 1987. There are challenges like the take from the state, and we have been coping with those as we've moved along. But 30 years ago, the city of Paso Robles was a very different place. We had rapid expansion on the east side, and we had aging infrastructure on the west side, and we had population needs to be served, and we really wanted to see that occur in our west side downtown. We did have our share of community fears. And our community fears focus on things that were being discussed today. Misuse of eminent domain, mostly from residential property owners. We were able to come to somewhat of a neutralization of that fear by limiting the redevelopment agency's power of eminent domain to 12 years. We did come back and renew that power after that 12 years, but I have to say that we've never, the agency has never used or had need to use eminent domain. We also had concerns from special districts, school district, cemetery district, Cuesta College. We had to sit at the table with all of those folks and think through what this would mean long-term, short-term, and in some cases we did negotiate pass-through agreements with those groups to make sure that we could neutralize some of their concerns. Other misconceptions about taxes being raised, we had to sit with people and really explain, but really not all were convinced, and in the end it just took the fortitude of the city council to make a decision, and then through the track record of implementation of our plan to show that this really was a tool that could be used. Our redevelopment area is over 1,100 acres, most of the west side. We pulled in land on the east side. We've been able to use the increment to give a facelift to our downtown city park, to implement facade improvement programs with our first slug of increment, really setting the stage for investment. We've been able to invest in civic resources, a new library with Interim City Hall, a whole redevelopment of a block to show that the downtown was a place to invest. The public-private partnership was listed in your staff report where we were able to assemble properties, and I'm running out of time.
Came all the way down here. Take the time.
Too kind. But we were, I think, Supervisor Meacham, you understand that this has been probably a tool that was well-fitted for pass rolls because we really, from an economic approach, wanted to be able to set the stage for business to come online and to do what it does best when the time is right. So we were able to really control a lot of our own destiny and infuse money into the economy at the right times when it otherwise would not have been available. And just one last comment on the project, the sub-areas, et cetera, and retaining control. The City of Paso Robles established a project area committee to guide its redevelopment agency, who is its city council. And that might be a possible tool to just establish project area committees for each of your subcommittees to guide the board should you choose to proceed with this. I'll answer any questions that you have, but the redevelopment area continues to generate increment for us at this time.
Mr. Sargent, how many years has it been for City of Paso Robles?
We established the district in, or the plan area in 1987. It's a 45, well, originally it was a 45-year plan, but some of the laws affected the duration of a plan area. Right now it's going to sunset in 2028.
In the beginning, you mentioned the successes and the challenges. Can you tell us a little bit about the challenges?
Again, challenges being, I think, mostly just community fears. We were the first redevelopment area to be proposed in the county. There was, I think, just fear of misuse of powers. Mostly, again, in the residential owners in commercial districts that were non-conforming uses and feared that they were going to be kicked to the curb for some sort of a commercial project, as Eric Greening described. And, again,
we couldn't
get rid of all those fears. We had to just show through demonstration.
Thank you. I think I do have a question in regard to the concern relative to Prop 22 that's out there now. And I know in a couple of years prior that the state has taken redevelopment funds. How has that affected Paso Robles? And then secondly, how will that money be repaid, or will it, or is it proposed to be repaid?
Yeah. To date, over the life of the plan area, we've sold over $20 million in tax increment bonds. And I believe the take from the state was about $1.3 million most recently. We had sold our last set of bonds in 2009, and so that was fortunate that we had this pot of money that we were able to pay with, and we didn't have to rob from somewhere else to repay the state. So that was unappropriated redevelopment money, so we were able to kind of sail through on that. It's just really unfortunate. I think it's going to play out in the court still, but we don't see any promise to repay those funds at this time.
Thanks, Meg. Appreciate you coming down. I have no other requests. I'll bring it back to the board. I'm going to respond to just a couple of things, if I could, in regard to postponing and being understaffed. I think right now is probably the most appropriate time, if I could suggest that, because of the inactivity that we see out there from building and other things, I think that right now is probably the most appropriate time to take a look at this. And, you know, I look at this as kind of another tool. This is just a tool that you could utilize for some of these areas that are really struggling, and I don't mean to focus just strictly on my area, but a couple of these communities that talk about things that they'd like to do, builders that would like to come and do something, but they're having a tough time just getting past that financial hurdle. And to give you an example with the Paso Robles situation, where the downtown area where the cinema is right now, I used to own that corner. I could get nothing done because of the drainage situation that was there. I sold it. It went through three other owners trying to get something accomplished. Never could get it done. When the redevelopment agency came about and they incorporated that into it, they built the drainage system with the redevelopment funds, and now you can see the success of that cinema and what's taken place in the downtown area. I just find this as another way, and speaking of timing, Dana, how long does it take from the time you would start? I mean, let's say by December you come back with a scenario that we could look at from a budgetary standpoint and otherwise. How long would it actually take to put a redevelopment agency in place?
Take 1 to 2 years.
Okay, so there's a considerable amount of time that would have to go by. Okay, I'm going to go to my colleagues. Thank you. Mr. Hill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would say that I would agree with your opinions that you've expressed there no need to wait until there's a proposition in courts. Redevelopment agencies have been in business for quite a long time, and unfortunately the state finds some point to raise funds wherever they can, but we can't continually dodge because of that. I did have a question for County Council on the eminent domain issue. How does this limitation jive with the Supreme Court decision in 2005, the Kellogg versus Connecticut, that I know is somewhat controversial, but I wondered how we were able to somehow say, well, yes, there's that opinion by Justice Scalia and four other justices that says you can do this, but the state of California says, no, you can't do this, if you're familiar. I may be really getting obscure now, which is...
I'm Tim McNulty with the County Council's office. I think that the limitations on how and when we would use eminent domain would depend on the circumstances we'd find ourselves in. And, I don't think that that case in particular would prevent us using eminent domain for purely governmental use in a redevelopment agency. I think that was the issue that the court had to deal with there.
Well, they were able to, I guess, what this says is that you can't take private property and transfer it to other private owners. In that case, I think, if I'm not mistaken, upheld the state of Connecticut's ability to do that.
Right, but I don't think there's any situation that I've heard of in the many presentations I've heard about redevelopment here at the county over the years where there would be the same sort of involvement of a private entity as there was there in Connecticut. Each time that we've looked at this, it's been something that the county's going to do on its own.
And Ken, planning staff, I mean, we may have slightly mischaracterized that in the staff report. So.
Mr. Jensen, do you have anything further on that?
I was just going to say that the scope of eminent domain would be determined in the first instance by state law. So that Kello case dealt with Connecticut, I think it was, mm-hmm. law. If California chooses to restrict our ability to use that, that is not affected at all by what can be done in Connecticut.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Sajjan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Light. Probably we can call it attention needed rather than...
is there an Armenian term that might be substituted, Mr. Shajan, that might work?
Possible. But last time I voted against it simply because both the unincorporated communities in my district, both Oceana and Nipomo, came and said, we don't want it, and I didn't want to do anything different than the desire of the communities as they came forward. So I do want to be sure that we do reach out to the community advisory councils, local jurisdictions, and because my vote is going to be based on their input. Personally, I'd like to see it happen. City of Rarogandy, where my business are, and the only incorporated city within my district is happy with what they have. But the impact going to be on the unincorporated areas, and simply going to support what I hear them say. So that's, if we cut short to rush to bring it back by December 7th, and if they haven't had the time and the comfort zone to give me their proper input, so I just want to be upfront with you folks to say that my vote is going to be based on their input.
Mr. Gibson. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do appreciate Ms. Williamson taking the time to come down here. You know, among all the outrageous things that Sacramento has done, I didn't realize that there's no repayment on the redevelopment take at this point. I would submit that even in the face of that affront, we do need to move forward. I agree very much with the chair. And I am sensitive to the idea that we need to take the time to communicate with the communities to allay the fears that have been expressed. This is not new in this state. This has, I think, had to go on in every successful redevelopment effort. I think we do need to simply move it forward. And if the planning department has indicated that they have space in their schedule, I know this probably will drop into Mr. Lilly's lap here and Mr. Singelwald's, Dottos, you know, it is a process that has the potential of exerting some local control on what goes on, and I think for that reason, it's something that we should definitely embrace. I guess I wonder whether we might recast the events of early December slightly in the form of a study session. Perhaps. I think between now and November we have the opportunity to advertise to the advisory councils that we are going to be moving again on redevelopment. We can work on a lot of the work that was done in 04 and 05 when we studied this before. I know times have changed dramatically since then in terms of our ability to finance infrastructure. And I wonder if I could ask the Director of Public Works here a question as to how we might be able to combine, or whether we might be able to combine, redevelopment funds with other infrastructure financing tools to, you know, to actually perhaps scrape together enough pennies to creatively accomplish some of the things we know we've
Mr. Rogan, I'd like to ask you to use the other microphone if you could, please.
Because we want to hear what you have to say.
I've got the timer on.
Jeremy Meacham, members of the board, Pablo Ogren, Public Works Department. You know, certainly, as some of your board members have expressed, I also consider this to be a financing tool. And in today's environment, you know, have as many tools in the bag as possible in order to address whether it's a public works project or whether it's not a public works project. You know, they're all community projects. One way or another, some of the projects, you know, our department may take a lead on, and other projects may not be involved in at all. But as a financing tool, we are finding ourselves more and more with the need to bring in multiple different forms of financing in order to accomplish projects. And, you know, we could go on and on with a list of projects where that's been necessary. So I do think it's extremely important. I like the idea of a study session also, because just delving into the additional level of details, I was sort of hemming and hawing on whether or not I was going to come up and express some of my thoughts. But I guess the dominant one in my mind, which I think is appropriate for additional, you know, study session, is this issue of sub-area or, you know, one large, breaking it down into many different components or having one sort of larger one, because that ultimately addresses the issue of equity. Certainly, communities are going to say, we want to make sure that we have our fair share. The idea of breaking it down into multiple different, you know, sub-areas, and that the money or the tax or increment financing that is used in one, developed in one area, can only be used in one area. You know, I think that's sort of a challenging type of a proposition, because while we want to see the equities, we also know that that's limiting. And in redevelopment areas, those are some of the areas that have the greatest need for improvements. And if the county takes the position that, hey, community, you're on your own, you know, you're not going to get help from any other area, then are we really doing the best that we can in the utilization of a redevelopment agency? So there's an equity issue there. I'm always inclined to want your board to have the maximum discretion and the maximum flexibility moving forward. And so I think some of addressing that equity is looking into what types of improvements are being looked at for the different communities. You know, what's the timing of the ability to implement improvements? So in any case, I think that single project area versus many different project areas is an extremely important issue here. I'm more than glad, you know, we've been coordinating with planning on this issue and some of the other ones on infrastructure financing, and our department is more than glad to go out with Dana and the others in order to address some of these issues on a community basis.
Before I go to Mr. Seacock, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so let me just offer my colleagues my thought on a study session, whether it's early December or early in the next year, wherever staff believes they're ready to do. We have the ability to contact advisory councils, indicate that community by community we're going to be looking at this and we want that input. I think we can usefully accumulate outside experience to present at the study session, and I would hope Mr. Ryu might be available to work with staff on helping us that. Get the planning department to outline a rough timeline, which I would expect, in fact, demand would include community outreach of an appropriate sort, leading to public hearings that make these decisions. That we do talk about the question of sub areas, individual project areas, or one project area. In particular, thinking about the concept of return on investment, meaning we invest this tax increment, we're going to get an increased in assessed valuation is the idea. And whether the one or separate project areas gets us the best return on investment, I think, is a conversation we need to have. And then by the time we get to the study session, we might we will know more about our relationship with the state on redevelopment, whether it's through proposition or through a revolution that we take to Sacramento. And, well, never mind. So those are my thoughts, Mr. Chairman.
Ready to go with you.
Yeah.
Mr. Seabach, did you have a comment, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Jerry Seabach, Auditor Controller. Just my personal view, I think it's a good idea to, I think this merits study, the tool of redevelopment is powerful, but characterizing it as a study session probably is a good idea now to put the trial balloon out there and see how many darts get tossed at it early on, maybe. And I want to agree with Mr. Ogren about the project area and sub-areas is a critical decision. The last time it was looked at, some of the areas really were too small. There was just a tiny bit of blight in an area. It wouldn't stand on its own. It wouldn't be cost-effective to mess around with that as its own area. Others are big enough, probably Oceano, San Miguel, and a couple others. As far as Ms. Williamson's comments, also, I want to also support her opinion that money's not coming back, that the taking from the counties and cities that the state did this last year was controlled by Proposition 1A, the initiative, which made it a loan. So it really was, it's supposed to be a loan, we're supposed to get paid back. But what they did to the redevelopments was not. They never made a promise to pay that back, so I wouldn't bank on that at all. So waiting, at least in December 7th, you'd know if the proposition passed or not, so you'd know more than you do today. We also have differences between when Paso Robles and when Pismo started their redevelopment. They're the two older agencies in this county. It was under a different law. About 10 years ago, AB 1290, I think, was passed, which changed how redevelopment projects get started, and the schools part of it is calmed down. It was a big problem with schools and other agencies with this negotiation of special deals and pass-throughs and everything, and the city of Paso Robles and the county had quite a big discussion about that and an agreement, which I think ended up serving both agencies well. But now you can't negotiate with the schools or any other agencies. It's what they call mandatory pass-throughs at certain levels for 10 years. Then there's another level for the next 20 and another, I mean, for the next 10 and then another level for the next 10. So you don't have the ability. You could sit down and talk to the schools, but you can't do much for them unless you wanted to build them a playground or something, which they would love to have that. But you can't really pass through money under the current law. So what it really means is the ones that actually lose, well, let's go back to the schools. Most of our school districts are not basic aid. That means if $100,000 of tax increment flows to the development area, the redevelopment, instead of the school district, the state gives the district $100,000 more, generally. So it doesn't cost program for the schools to have a redevelopment agency go into their district area. The exception is the basic aid districts, and that the big ones here are San Luis Coastal and Coast Unified. So you would have a difference in the way tax would flow to schools in Los Osos, for example, if you chose to set up a project area there, or in Cambria if you chose to set up a project area there. That could be more problematic for those school districts. There are some protections, but that's an issue you will face if you want to go into those two communities particularly. So I think that's what I wanted to bring out. And any other questions? I'm here.
Appreciate that. Thank you, sir. Supervisor Patterson.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's become painfully obvious over the past many years that the absence of or deficiencies in resources and infrastructure has really created some severe problems in developing our unincorporated communities. And like Chairman Meacham, I feel that a redevelopment agency is simply another tool in the toolbox to address some of these deficiencies in our unincorporated communities. I like very much the idea of having a study session. I would include on the invitee list our planning commissioners as well as members of CSD boards. And we can engage them in the conversation as well about what the needs of the various communities might be. I think it's critical that we include the communities where we're considering redevelopment agencies and educate them about what it means to have a redevelopment agency, how they work, and get their support, because ultimately they'll be the ones affected by it. And I think, again, it's shown remarkable success in areas in this county. I would hope that we could look for some examples of unincorporated communities that have developed successfully from redevelopment agencies. So I would support staff's recommendation.
Mr. Seebach, yes, sir.
I apologize. There was one other thing I wanted to bring up. I talked about the schools' issue with the finances is not as serious as it used to be because of the mandatory pass-throughs and the state backfill, they call it. The ones that will be a problem is your own. The county general fund will be losing funds in that area that it would otherwise have. The county library and a special districts, and for example, in Cambria you have a CSD, in Napomo you have a CSD, in practically all those areas you have some kind of a CSD or some other special district. So those folks would be wanting to know, well, we're going to be losing this much tax money over the next 30 or 40 years. What are you going to do for us in return, and how does this pay off for them? So look for issues with them.
Thank you for that dark cloud. I was wondering, hate to put you on the spot, our new planning director, but in San Diego County where you were past employed, are there redevelopment agency areas or areas in the county area there?
Good morning, Chairman Meacham, members of the board. There is one in particular. It's called the Upper San Diego River Improvement Project. It follows an area along the San Diego River that was traditionally an industrial ag open space area. I don't have the data necessarily available here at this hearing, but as a part of some of the public testimony that came up, there was some discourse that I heard that we would benefit from going a little bit further afoot in the field and researching what other counties do beyond perhaps the Central Coast as examples to then take this initiative to the next step and discuss that as a part of the planning session.
Great. Thank you, sir. Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And only Mr. Stivak can be called a dark cloud when he wears baby blue. I think all the ideas of my colleagues are good ones. The study session and bringing a lot of other stakeholders and our planning commissioners, I think that's all a good idea. And Mr. Stivak actually illustrated, I think why I certainly wanted to stay neutral on 22, because we're in this constant whack-a-mole game with the state. You know, you pass one proposition, they say, okay, we'll raid from somewhere else. You pass another proposition, and they'll find somewhere else to raid. We'll just keep whacking that mole until, I guess, we've...
Worthy opponent.
Yeah, it's that mole called the legislature and governor. So I would, I don't know if we have further discussion, but I think
I have staff light on here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kemi Griffin, County staff. I just wanted to make sure that we understand what your expectation is for the study session. So what I heard was that we would bring back, as part of the study session, examples from local jurisdictions and other county RDAs, that we would do rough timelines, rough costs. We'd have a discussion of the sub-area project area, what gets a better return on investment, the outcome of Prop 22 and perhaps the legal challenge, and that we would notify the community advisory councils, the CSDs, the planning commission of the study session and invite them to attend.
I think you've pretty much capitalized the whole thing. One thing I would suggest, though, I don't think that the December 7th is a hard and fast number. I think if staff needs to take whatever time they need to take to put together something, but I think that the general direction of the board is that we're interested. I'm getting this from my colleagues, mm-hmm. And I do completely concur with Supervisor Assage, and we will not make determinations that are against what our communities are wanting to do, but they need to understand the full breadth of this on both sides of it, and that's part of our job is to be able to convey that to them. So with that, I'd entertain a motion if someone so chooses.
I'd move that we adopt staff recommendation with the direction given by colleagues and also move it to a date uncertain rather than to December 7th.
Somewhere near.
I'll second.
Okay, I have a motion by Supervisor Hill, seconded by Supervisor Patterson. Madam Clerk, do you have the motion? I just think I need a voice vote on this one. All in favor, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. That concludes business for the day. Mr. Jensen, closed session, please.
After you take public comment on closed session, we'll need about an hour.
Okay, I have no request for public comment on closed session. We will be adjourned. We'll report out in about an hour.